Did you know that the University of Central Missouri has been leading innovation for nearly 150 years? With more accreditations and more qualified faculty members, our commitment to academic success is unparalleled. And we make sure every student receives the support they need to graduate on time and with less debt. So whatever opportunity you're looking for, make your impact sooner at UCM, with campuses located in Warrensburg, Lee Summit, and online. Find out more about UCM and the power of opportunity in action at ucmo.edu.
This is Voices of UCM, sponsored by Rise Community Services. Today, we sat down with junior digital media production student Wyatt Zirkel. We talk about Media Creators Association, his film Redneck Frankenstein, and his transition to the DMP major. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Voices of UCM. I'm your host, Andrew Zellner, and today I'm sitting down with an MCA representative, Wyatt Zirkel. How are you doing today, Wyatt?
I'm doing pretty all right today.
How are you doing? I'm doing good. I had a good morning. Got a lot of work done. Schoolwork, this work.
Love to hear it.
But yeah. So, as a sort of representative of MCA, what does MCA stand for starting out, but like kind of like what is the general thesis of it?
MCA is going to stand for Media Creators Association. When I was brought into it, or when I first heard about it, at the beginning of fall semester of 2023, it was kind of suggested to be a little bit more than what we have been doing. I was told there'd be more short films were definitely the first thing working on, filming a lot of stuff like that. At one point, I remember podcasts being mentioned, but it's more because of how much everybody is involved with other things that was mentioned. I previously worked on a podcast, so that helped bring me in. I had an interest in film, and that's how I ended up being there as well. But so far, these past two semesters, we've really been working on short film type stuff. I'm directing the short film that we're working on currently.
Yeah.
We had two that we were working on. The director for the other film is now currently in New Zealand.
Oh, well.
So, yeah.
I mean, that's going to alter production a little bit.
Yeah, things get in the way. Things change. Sometimes you're working on a movie. Sometimes you're in New Zealand. These are what happen.
It's just things that happen, yeah.
But yeah, MCA, that's going to be the Media Creators Association of UCM. It tries to bring in as many people as possible from working different areas of DMP. And, of course, it's open to people outside of DMP. I used to be in an anthropology major before I came in.
Oh, yeah. And we can talk about that in a little bit, maybe after we discuss some MCA stuff a bit more. So you're saying they're working on two different films right now? Or two different projects, rather?
Yeah, two different projects. I'm not entirely sure of what the title was for the other project. I apologize. I remember it being untitled for a little bit. I remember it being very interesting in concept, a lot of dream-type stuff. It sounded very fascinating. And then we're also working on my movie, my short film called Redneck Frankenstein. And it's been a bit different, I think. I'm still very much learning. I'm new to the DMP program, so there's a lot of things I'm still learning along the way. And everyone there has been very helpful with that as well.
Yeah.
For a little flavor taste of what that one's like, that production, I get to paint one of my actors green as if they were a Frankenstein's monster. It is about an immigrant doctor that comes to the United States, the American Midwest, to continue the family Frankenstein tradition.
Fantastic. I wasn't sure what the concept was at the meeting. I was like, oh, that's a cool idea for a movie, like a redneck sort of Frankenstein. I didn't really get the whole, I don't think I ever got the whole plot at some point, because I think I showed up a little bit after it was like fully in production.
I was gonna say, yeah, it was a little bit further along the line. I do like the idea that when I first suggest that to a lot of people, they're like, oh, so it's like rednecks making a Frankenstein. It's like, oh, no.
Not quite. Hold on.
I was going to say the monster is the redneck. To me, it's kind of like that joke in a way that it's like when people talk about the book Frankenstein.
It's
like, Frankenstein's not the monster. It's like, no, in this case, the monster is the redneck.
Yes.
Frankenstein is the doctor. But the redneck is the monster.
The redneck part of it is the monster.
So that's something I've definitely enjoyed, along with talking about it outside of MCA.
Yeah, I'm sure.
It's just like getting to share some of that.
I'm glad we'll be able to talk about it a little bit. So yeah, you said this is like your film pretty much. This is like your project for the most part.
Yeah, first time I've ever gotten to work on something in this kind of way. There's a few different dabblings I've done before coming to UCM with stuff I've worked on with friends or even previously long ago in high school.
Yeah.
but this is like truly getting in depth to it. Mm-hmm. Things that I'm learning quite a bit about the pre-production, during production, and post-production process. We still have a little bit to film for the movie, but we've gotten a lot of the scenes out of the way, and there's a lot of learning I've done about what a producer's role is and the true ethics of it all, the things that a director does and how they organize and work with everybody and how that affects every facet of it.
So you're the director for the film, is that right?
Yes, director and writer.
Okay.
Yeah, this was an idea that I cooked up randomly a while ago, and I was like, all right, they're asking for short film ideas. I didn't, in full honesty, I didn't think people would go for it because I was new.
Yeah.
I thought it might be a little weird.
It's definitely a little out there, but I think the crowd there is usually for out there ideas.
I was going to say, they definitely went for it, and it sounds like they haven't quite had something in a way where someone's getting painted a neck up green. I've tried my best to hide the a lot of green on him so that way we don't have to paint my actor as much.
Yeah, you can only do that so much though when looking at clothing and stuff, but yeah,
so he'll have like his hands are green, his neck and up is green, and luckily I also didn't go for a gluing neck bolts to him all for his comfort. I didn't want to put him through that. Especially for something that's made extracurricular activity.
Yeah.
It's more for fun.
It's more for fun. It's not supposed to make your actors uncomfortable.
Exactly.
That's not ideal.
It's like, I don't want to put someone through too much.
Yeah.
The green makeup, I understand that it's like, we want to get as much done in one day so that way we don't have to overextend how many times we paint him green.
Because I'm pretty sure it stains for a while, doesn't
it? It can. I was going to say, it's a fun process. It's using the same makeup that they would out in Hollywood. It's the same brand of makeup that they use for like Gamora and Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, yeah.
Pro Air, spelt with two I's. It is their hybrid synthetic makeup. I apologize that the makeup is something that I knew a little bit about before joining MCA.
Fair enough.
So this is where I kind of come from. Go ahead. Keep it. There was just a little bit of information about that I found interesting to make sure that it gives to people that it's like, it can stain you. It depends a lot about your own skin and stuff like
that. Yeah, I'm sure.
And it sounds like, personally, I know that makeup's on me, it stains a lot more than it might stain him and some others. It really depends.
Yeah, I would imagine that sort of thing is based on, because human skin is weird sometimes, and it affects people differently.
And since it's a synthetic alcohol and water-based makeup,
it
makes it a big difference to how much it can come off. The big key is always be careful with water, because sometimes water makes it stick more.
Yeah,
it's fun.
And I'm sure it's a fun time having to put that on before every shoot.
Oh yeah, I was gonna say a good 30 minutes of time just working with the airbrush, making sure it's feeding.
Yep.
And it makes it a lot faster than doing it, you know, classically.
I mean, like by like hand painting it and stuff like that. That would be a complete nightmare. That would take like a couple hours, I imagine.
At least, yeah.
At least, yeah.
So airbrush, you just. I say quickly, you know, like, but no, it's still 30 minutes.
I mean, like, it's 30 minutes, though. Yeah, that's a pretty big chunk of time.
And luckily, it is just neck up and hands.
Yeah, it's a bit less intensive than some other films out there.
Exactly. I was going to say, and sometimes I'm like, why did I choose to do this? And I was like, yeah, because it's Frankenstein. There's two ways of going about this, and this was the easy one.
Yeah, that's fair enough. So yeah, this is like your first time really directing and stuff. How has that experience kind of been? Like, what has that been like?
It's very interesting. Being like, I've seen documentaries and stuff like that. I've read books by directors. But it's different to be in that kind of position and get like a taste for it. And it's something that I find that I think I enjoy. I want to continue to pursue that. But it's very different than what I would have thought.
Right.
It's a lot more of, there's people there to help work with you. They have their own ideas, and so you got to work with them as well. I was going to say, I understand that since it's a student film, essentially, that changes things. It changes a lot of things. But as I see it, it's very fascinating to have it from that beginning point. I have learned a lot and how smoothly it can be and how jagged it can be. It's about almost my own willingness on where it comes to things.
Yeah.
I feel bad that I've dragged my feet a little bit on the production that we could have been going earlier. And it definitely comes down to me in some of those instances. There's a lot of power that the director has when it goes into that kind of thing. And it's something that I don't know if I completely understood beforehand. How much effort that you yourself as a director puts into something to what you're getting out of something.
Right, yeah. So, sounds like it's been a very, I don't know if enriching is the right word, but it's been a very,
I think enriching works.
Okay, then, yeah.
I was going to say, it's very educational. I have learned a lot. I've learned about where I need to pick up my own feet because it's like I got lost in pre-production personally. There's a lot of things I wasn't sure how to go about. But once you start asking questions, it is a lot easier.
Well, yeah, especially when you have
the group of like upperclassmen there that are all interested in your project and willing to help you out at those steps, that's like a huge,
especially,
a huge help. Because I mean, like when you're in your initial like video classes and like your initial audio classes, especially in audio, like you're kind of all on your own in audio pretty much to work
figure
on
it
stuff.
Out.
So it's like having that extra group help there of people who have done stuff like that before is a huge help, I imagine.
It is a big help. Yeah. I was gonna say I've had a lot of juniors, seniors, and I like the term geniors, that kind of that limbo state,
that weird in between state. Yeah.
And they have been very helpful. Everyone mm-hmm. that's an officer in MCA and the club, they have been extremely helpful working on the project and helping teach me a lot of things. And it's honestly helping me in my classes as I'm going forward.
I'm sure.
Creating a shot list, I learned so many things that have actually helped me in some of my classes.
Uh-huh.
A lot of the things that we were going back over. It's extremely helpful for the club. If you are a part of the DMP major, I do highly suggest joining the club because it's a good refresher. And as well as if you're new to the major,
mm-hmm.
it really helps trying to hone in some of those things.
Yeah.
The club really is for people that are excited about making movies, though.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone there seems to be on the same page about movies, making short films, and working mm-hmm. on things like that.
Yeah. And I don't even think it's necessarily limited to specifically short film. We have some short documentaries. I think there was... There was one person who was working on a documentary about the production of Romeo and Juliet that just wrapped up recently.
Yes, so I believe that's still in production. I believe it's in post-production now.
Mm-hmm.
We had two more documentaries that were made technically outside of MCA, but still by
they're
major people.
They're related in there. Were made by people who were from the club. Yeah.
The Under the Trans Umbrella, I believe that won an award back a few months ago.
Oh, did it win an award?
It was very good. I really enjoyed it. I believe it was even shown on KMOS.
Like, I think it was aired. Yeah.
And then so was. Indie, I apologize that I don't remember the full name of the documentary. I also watched it, and it was also very good. It's about mm-hmm. the indie music scene, about the area and kind of Missouri, Kansas City regions. There's a lot of stuff that goes into those documentaries. I find them very enriching. Mm-hmm. They're made by students. It's very empowering
to
see other students make these things mm-hmm. and how good they can be.
Yeah.
It's very helpful to have that kind of, like, it feels weird to say role model because it's like, in a way, it feels like that should be like an older figure.
Yeah, but it doesn't necessarily have to be, because it's a role model in the way that they're showing you the ropes, essentially. It's just like, oh, here's how you can just make a movie if you want to go out and do it.
These are your peers. They are there to mm-hmm. help. They show you as they're learning their own craft. Mm. As much as you are learning, they are learning. You can learn from them, then they can learn from you.
Hmm.
I was going to say, I know that I have skills that may not everybody in the club have.
Yeah.
Like, I have a small background in learning about makeup and stage makeup and screen makeup and uh-huh. things like that. And I know not everybody in the club may have those special effects type skills.
Mm-hmm.
But where I'm lacking in, like, camera skills or learning how to direct.
Yeah.
I can learn.
You have that, and then you can also learn it as you go, yeah.
Exactly. Especially with, like, script writing.
Oh, right, yeah.
I wasn't sure where to start.
Mm-hmm.
I asked some questions. I looked at some examples.
Uh-huh.
And I really got to get into it.
Yeah.
It is very interesting to have that kind of group, that enclosure. I'm not sure a good way to put it.
I don't know if that's the right word, but we'll use enclosure for now.
Yeah. To have that kind of group setting where you can learn from so many people about those mm-hmm. little facets and how they build and how many revisions you may have to do.
Mm-hmm.
I think for the script for Redneck Frankenstein, I think the one that's officially being made into the movie is the third mm-hmm. draft of the script.
Yeah.
It's been a little bit more padded out for time, a few extra mm-hmm. jokes. So that way it's not just a mockumentary, essentially.
Right, yeah. It's got a little bit of spice in there.
Yeah, adding more. Mm-hmm. Make sure that this is added so that way this is padded out. This mm-hmm. makes more comedic. It is supposed to be a comedy, after all.
Yeah, so it should probably have some jokes in there.
Yeah, just make sure. It's so helpful to have those extra perspectives of people that have been doing this.
And I don't even think it's necessarily just the extra perspectives, but it's just like you were saying, like how you have that background in makeup. Everyone in there has a background potentially in a different area of filmmaking. So when you combine that all together, you can really get a good synthesis of skills there.
Exactly. We've had people that their thing is they primarily want to work with cameras, mm-hmm. Audio, and of course other people that want to do more producing, acting. We get quite a few actors that come in, and sometimes they don't always stay for club, but that's the nature of clubs.
I mean, like, yeah, and especially for something like MCA, where it's kind of like, oh yeah, you can come in and work on stuff, or you can work on one project and then go away for a little bit. It's like, it's very open.
Yeah, it's part of the nature of the beast that the way it is, it's very open.
Mm-hmm.
We have different productions that are going on. We have a feature production that's still being worked on. I'm not sure how much I am able to talk about that. It's a lot more in depth than some of the other student things that have been going on.
Yeah, we can keep it at that then.
Yeah. It's amazing to see how much goes into it, how many people can come in and come out, and where they're going, what they're doing, and how they can ask you. It's like, how can I help? What's going on? Is there anything I can... And just asking people for advice and things like that.
Yeah.
It's a great way to network with other peers, so that way you can interact and understand more about what you're doing.
We'll be right back with more Voices of UCM, brought to you by Rise Community Services.
That's the sound of a door slamming in your face. That's the sound heard by many individuals living with a disability. But it doesn't have to be. RISE Community Services is committed to opening doors, not closing them. We believe that each person deserves a life that is full of hope and empowered by self-choice. If you or a loved one need help, please visit watchusrise.org.
A degree in digital media production with an emphasis in digital journalism will develop your skill set for work in multimedia outlets, including print, online, and broadcast. Our faculty members bring real-world experience to the classroom, and students can showcase their work online at digitalberg.com and in the student-led newspaper, The Mule Skinner. For more information on this or other concentrations within the digital media production program, please visit ucmo.edu/DMP.
Welcome back to Voices of UCM, brought to you by RISE Community Services. Today, we sat down with junior digital media production student Wyatt Zirkel. We continue our discussion by talking more about Redneck Frankenstein.
So what have been some like production challenges that you've run into on Redneck Frankenstein?
Well, my first thought was, I started from absolutely nothing.
That's not necessarily a bad thing, though, because...
Exactly. It literally came into it kind of fresh. Uh-huh. I had a bare minimum understanding of things.
Yeah.
But that was one of the biggest hurdles, is trying to come back around to fully understanding and encompassing a lot of these
things.
Right,
yeah.
Learning a lot about pre-production has been huge hurdle to me.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of paperwork type things that I didn't even know where to start with beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I knew how to paint somebody green and make them look like a monster. I knew that part.
Yeah.
And then like, learning the facets of script writing and screenwriting and everything goes into that. I've made a functional script. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say it's the best. I'm not going to even say it's my best work.
I mean, like, if it's like, but it's one of your, it's an earlier film in your overall career, right, though. And so, I mean, like, it's kind of... It's expected to not be like the most perfect thing in the world, but if it's good in it enough and it serves the film as a whole, then that might be good enough for starting out, right?
Exactly. And it's very helpful to have those kind of peers be there to tell you that,
right,
as well.
Right, to help revise it.
So this is the kind of things that I would have done before, but I've done this and that helps this. Like, hearing that kind of come back and forth, it's so helpful, and having those kind of moments of learning.
Yeah.
Some of the biggest, like, how do I put it? Issue, like... mountains to climb that I've come across personally. It's just getting onto the saddle.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things that going into it seems daunting, but once you're in there, once you're like getting into a pool.
Yeah.
It starts out cold and then it's like, yeah, it's comfortable. It's that. That's how I felt, like going from one point of not knowing anything to learning so much.
Yeah.
That it really helps. It's a big help in that kind of aspect.
Yeah.
That's the biggest challenges that I feel like that I've faced in it, is going from not knowing anything to learning a decent chunk of what goes into making these
things. Yeah. I mean, like, for like a production of any kind, you kind of have to have like an open mind of like, hey, things are going to change. Things are going to shift around. I might learn something new that completely changes something in the film. It's like, you have to have that open mind.
Exactly. And that's a big thing that I tried to keep in mind in the first place, is like, there's a scope that you get when you're working on something, especially a student film.
Especially student film, when you're kind of restrained on location, where you either have to shoot it on campus or somewhere in the local area.
And, like, put it out there, being a broke college student.
You have to make a movie with minimal budget and minimal resources.
You got to figure out what to do. And that's why I think it's kind of good to have this interaction point of like,
yeah,
where I started with the possible ideas, mm-hmm. lowered that down to be like, okay, what can we do? Because
mm-hmm.
I had like more thoughts and processes. That was one of the big things that I changed with my script between version 1, 2, and 3 is this how scenes were going to go down with like, how many extras can I have? Where can I film?
Mm-hmm.
At first, there was a scene that was outside that had like, you know, Frankenstein style angry mob.
Yeah.
Completely change that because it's like you can't get that many people.
You have
it's
to realistically you would have to get like 20 people, 20 extras on a no budget on a college campus. It's like, how am I going
to
really?
It's like, how many Domino's pieces do I need to buy?
Yeah, exactly.
I find it's one of those big hurdles that, like, looking at it, it's just like, all right, how can I make this more achievable to my goals and to the restraints that I have?
Right.
So it's gone from like not even a point A, just like, here's this dot. Mm-hmm. All right, let's make this easier.
Yeah.
So it's gone from like this angry mob scene that turns, it's supposed to be kind of a subversion of expectations.
Yeah.
To, all right, here's a small group of people.
Yeah.
I think that makes a big difference in how these things go down. And it makes it a lot easier.
Yeah.
To also have other people there to tell you, to try and remind you to have that more realistic scope.
Yeah.
It's a college film. You can't make
a blockbuster.
Yeah. So you got to have that realistic view. It's like, all right, we can paint a man green. Doesn't mean that we can get an angry mob.
We got to think about the exact scope that we're working with here.
Right. It's like expecting to make Lord of the Rings when you just have somebody in elf ears, in a way.
Yeah.
Except you got to realize it's you got to use what you got.
Yeah.
Play to your strengths. Mm-hmm. And in this instance, I know that we've got a studio. We can paint a man green. Let's get him in there and talk.
Let's get him in there and then do it there.
Let's interview a Frankenstein, like that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Is that where the idea of like the mockumentary came from? Was it always kind of like that? With limitations, it's a pretty good way of working around those limitations with a mockumentary format like that.
It kind of started with, have you ever heard of the show What We Do in the Shadows?
Yeah.
Vampires. Kind of mixed with The Munsters, which is 1960s.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how many people listening or how much you know about The Munsters.
I mean, vague familiarity is
pretty
general across the board, but.
Family of monsters, they live in the state. Very, like, corny humor.
Yeah.
There's a certain point where it's very 60s.
Yeah.
And that's something that I kind of took into account, that it's like, all right, this is going to be influenced by this, this, and this.
Mm-hmm.
What We Do in the Shadows has that sitcom-esque style that I thought would be good with cutaway jokes.
Okay, yeah.
And that's where some of the revisions of the script came back in to have more of those cutaway jokes that help show the personalities of the two characters.
Okay, yeah.
We only really have the two characters. We have the monster and the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
So having those two actors, that shortens how much we have to worry about outward and how many people we have to organize other than extras for a scene.
Uh-huh.
So it really helps to have that kind of narrowed down.
Yeah.
And having that in a studio with a black background where they're like being interviewed, kind of similar to, well, just a sitcom, really.
Yeah.
It is literally, it's a situational comedy of doctor comes to the United States, creates a monster that's supposed to terrorize people. But it's kind of friends with the population.
And then it doesn't, yeah.
Yeah, and then he's just a goofy redneck.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where the conflict, and that's where you have these two characters butt heads.
Mm-hmm.
And it works really well to be able to have that in kind of that situation, to be able to have them talking to each other in an interview setting.
Yeah.
Cuts down on location. You don't have to have, you know, a laboratory.
Yeah.
You can get to have them on a black background, nice chair, lights.
In a studio with lights, yeah. So
especially.
Because you can control lighting so much easier in there. Like, if you had to do, like, a bunch of outside scenes, it would just be...
It would start to be a pain.
Yeah, because you can't really control the lighting outside very efficiently, unless it's, like, nighttime, but...
Exactly.
Unless you want to shoot at night, and that's a whole nother complicated affair.
And that was one thing that I was really glad that a few people mentioned to me in the beginning was think about lighting,
because
you can't always rely on outside to be so consistent. So to have something inside that you can control, that it can look similar, because you don't know how many days you're going to end up having to film.
Right. Yeah.
Because schedules change, things shift. Like, so far I have one extra day of filming and I've kind of reserved it, so that way it's all going to be the stuff outside.
Yeah.
Everything I've done before has been in a studio that where we can control the lighting so it can look consistent, and it all canonically will take place at around the same time.
Yeah.
So the lighting, I can, you know, split up filming dates between a month.
Mm-hmm.
It should look very similar, at least, if not the same.
Yeah.
And that's something I truly am thankful for, and that kind of lesson that was given to me at the beginning of fall semester.
Yeah. It just saves a ton of time, I imagine, because it's just like, hey, we know exactly where we're filming. We're filming in this place at whatever time, but that doesn't matter because you can control things there. Whereas if you had jumped into it where it's like, okay, I'm going to do all these outside scenes, you would have run into the issue where it would look inconsistent, especially if you're like going like from like a semester to a different semester, like where like exactly. Seasons changing, it's going to be completely different lighting outside.
You can have a cloud mess up an entire shot. Yeah. It'll change so much. So mm-hmm. To have that, yeah, that's one of those things that it's like, it should be such a, to hear it from a peer helps so much. To hear mm-hmm. it from like a professor is one thing.
Right.
To hear it from a peer that has already done that thing.
Yeah.
It helps mm-hmm. so much.
Well, yeah, because they have that personal experience to be talking about it.
Exactly. It is so nice to have that mm-hmm. in MCA.
Yeah. So, like, how far are you into the project? And when do you think it'll be out?
Ooh.
If you have, like, a vague notion of that.
See, so when I say I'm still learning, the editing process is one that I don't know much about the editing process. Mm. I know that we do have majority of the film done, though.
Yeah.
We've recorded. We can start to lay out a timeline of things.
Mm-hmm.
By the time that it's ready to be watched, I'm not entirely sure, to be fully honest.
Fair enough.
And that sounds like, once again, to nature of the beast.
I mean, like, yeah.
It sounds like hopefully it should be done by the end of the semester.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking that hopefully by then, easily by the end of April this month,
mm-hmm.
currently, that we'll be able to start to see it, that people can finally watch it. We only have one more day of filming that ideally, mm-hmm. just some, like a party scene.
Yeah.
Not many people, some outdoor stuff,
mm-hmm.
and we're good.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that that should be soon.
Mm. Cool.
We're going to find out.
I was going to say, I'm personally looking forward to it because I think it's a cool idea. Because it's like that, it's that twist on a classic sort of story, and I'm kind of a sucker for those. Those are always really fun for me.
I was gonna say, and that's something that I'm hoping that, like, that's something I like about classical stories.
Mm-hmm.
Since we do know these stories, there's a lot of pretext to them.
Mm-hmm.
So for student films, it also helps that you don't have to worry about rights.
Mm-hmm.
These are characters that people know.
Yep.
And that allows for jokes that you can do in a way that if you're doing comedy or even something dramatic,
mm-hmm.
you can write in a way that I think helps benefit the student body and people that know what exists.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you were to get to have a story about Frankenstein, everyone knows the basic concept of
Frankenstein. Everyone knows what happens in Frankenstein pretty much, yeah.
If you change a few things, make a thing modern, you don't have to worry about XYZ,
mm-hmm.
and it can do this.
Yeah.
Same with the Munsters and What We Do in the Shadows.
Yeah.
A sitcom about vampires or a family comedy about monsters that live together in suburban California.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what's fun about having those classic stories to rechange a few things.
Mm-hmm. You have like you combine different archetypes into a completely different form, and that's always really interesting to do because it's really versatile how many like character archetypes you have, with how many like I guess species in the case of like the Munsters and stuff, but like everyone knows what those are and like kind of how they function, but then if you like twist it a bit, it's like, oh, okay, that's interesting, and that can get people into it.
That's one of my favorite things of, like, I'm not going to lie, since I've written the script for Redneck Frankenstein, I've looked mm-hmm. into writing other scripts, and I've started a bunch of other scripts
uh-huh.
loosely on that.
Yeah.
Like The Invisible Man.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone knows what The Invisible Man is.
Right.
We understand that he's, you know, a thief, some kind of criminal of sorts. Mm-hmm. He's
invisible.
And
that's kind of...
You can play with that a lot.
Yeah.
There's a lot of jokes you can make out of that, of mm-hmm. filming something that literally isn't there.
Yeah.
Or a vampire... in living in New York and What We Do in the Shadows case.
Mm-hmm.
All those little kind of jokes I find really mm-hmm. funny. Not so much. I don't want to use the term easy.
No, yeah, but not easy, but like...
It helps.
It's versatility is just... It provides you an opportunity, essentially.
Exactly. Like taking anything, like Brothers Grimm stories,
the
fairy tales. There's a lot of opportunities.
I mean, anything
there.
In the public domain is just
exactly.
is open for use. So
it's like there's all these opportunities, and I mm-hmm. think that having that kind of look, I'm hoping that maybe, I'm hoping that it's good, that people will like it,
mm-hmm.
but I hope at least somebody will see it and think that, hey, I could do something similar.
Yeah,
especially on campus.
Well, yeah, it's because like you said, it's like the writing part of it is a lot easier when you have that basis to go off of. So getting it started right then is a lot easier.
Right.
The barrier to entry is a lot less.
How the monster comes to be, because everyone knows.
Because everyone knows it's Frankenstein.
Right. I don't have to show a scene of him, how do I phrase that? Sewing a man together.
Yeah, I guess.
Or, you know, lightning or electricity of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
He's already there.
Mm-hmm.
We know that context.
Yeah.
Just like the idea of a vampire, even in the original story of Dracula. You don't have to show Dracula being bitten.
Yeah.
He is the vampire.
He is the vampire, yeah.
This is the monster. I don't have to show you him being, you know, electrified to life.
Mm-hmm.
So I think having that backdrop really helps.
Yeah, it's just, and it also helps establish familiarity with the audience, like, immediately, because it's like, oh, yeah, it's a Frankenstein. And then
exactly.
The audience exactly kind of knows what the basics are there, and then you can go from there. It's like, oh, this is how we change things. This is how we kept some things the same. It's just a nice jumping off point for the audience and for you as a creator.
And that's why I also like the subversion that I'm adding to it, that the monster isn't terrorizing people.
Yeah.
That's why another reason that, like, having that kind of classical story trope,
yeah,
subversion to it, or even an addition to it,
mm-hmm.
I think it's really helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And especially with how much encouragement from peers that you may get for suggesting. It's like, I like that idea. Let's rate this joke and put that in there and see how this goes here.
Yeah.
It's going to say, having those classical stories and peers that know what you're talking about, it really helps.
Stay tuned for more after this break. Voices of UCM is sponsored by Rise Community Services.
Every minute, there are 6 children born in the U.S., and one of them will be born with a developmental disability. Rise Community Services believes that an individual's potential doesn't vanish simply because they were born with a unique set of challenges. We believe that each person deserves a life full of hope and empowered by self-choice. If you or a loved one need help, please visit watchusrise.org.
A degree in digital media production with an emphasis in digital cinema will prepare you for all aspects of film production, such as screenwriting, editing, cinematography, and motion graphics. Our faculty members bring real-world experience to the classroom, and students can showcase their work in film festivals, UCM's CTV, and DigitalBerg.com. For more information on this or other concentrations within the Digital Media Production program, please visit ucmo.edu/DMP.
You're listening to Voices of UCM, sponsored by Rise Community Services. Today, we sat down with junior digital media production student Wyatt Zirkel. We finish our talk by discussing Wyatt's transition to the digital media production major.
So for if students want to get involved with MCA, even from other majors, like how would they go about that?
So normally we do put out different reminders of when meetings are. Mm-hmm. Currently, I'm not sure how next fall might suggest or how those meetings may go.
Yeah.
But if it is the same, they would be at 6 o'clock in Martin, 1:30.
Mm-hmm.
We all show up. We have our ideas. We talk about what we're going to do. In this case, this semester, we've been doing, you know, check-ins on how filming's going everybody. Things like that. We've done a senior showcase.
Mm-hmm.
We've had production meetings.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're a student that's willing to come in, like I said, at the beginning of fall semester, I was a anthropology student. That was my major. I came in. I was welcomed immediately, kind of a thing. Everyone was very nice, very cordial. Not too cordial.
I mean, but just nice and
polite.
Polite, yeah.
Everyone was very nice. It was very welcoming. That's how I want to put it. But you can be any major. You can do anything.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have an interest in making movies, it's a good place to go.
Yeah.
Anybody is welcome to come to MCA. Currently, Martin 1:30 at 6 o'clock. Excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
No, 5 to 6.
It's 5 to 6.
I said that out loud. And I was like, 6 is when it ends. Starts at 5 o'clock.
5 o'clock.
I apologize. I was going to say I'm a great representative.
I mean, like, it's... I think you said it before correctly, so if you say it again, it's...
I was going to say, if they're still...
It should be
They
fine.
Will hear this.
Yeah, we can hope.
But that's a big endorsement. I do highly suggest any major, if you have an interest in making movies, please come to MCA.
Yeah. Cool. So, for specifically you, what was it exclusively MCA that kind of made you decide to change majors, or were there some other factors there as well?
Well, there was a few other factors, personally and on campus and things like that.
Uh-huh.
I really wanted to be an archaeologist,
but
there was always part of me that wanted to make movies ever since I was a child.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like these kind of things culminating together. And then one day, it was like a light bulb going off. There was a poster in the anthropology lounge, the cave. The anthropology students will know what I'm talking about. And it's famous anthropologists or famous people that have studied anthropology.
Mm-hmm.
And George Lucas's name was on there.
Oh, okay.
So seeing that, it's like, you know what?
I'll go for it.
Yeah, I already like this club.
Mm-hmm.
my dad has worked on productions. He's worked on a few smaller movies. He worked on a syndicated show.
Yeah.
So it's like there's some experience I have in the concept of understanding.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, I'll try it.
Mm-hmm.
And so far, I'm really enjoying it. And I find it somewhat, I don't want to say intuitive. I'm still learning a lot.
Right, yeah.
But there is a certain point where I find it kind of welcoming.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of hard to describe it that way. And yeah. I don't want to be too contrived when I talk about that. But making that switch, it was something that I had a lot of personal thoughts about.
Yeah.
That kind of, to phrase it not too long form, a quarter life crisis of like, what am I doing? Where am I going to go?
Yeah.
I like this.
Mm-hmm.
This is comfortable in like the good kind of way.
Right. Yeah. This is like, oh, this is like, I feel, I guess welcomed is like,
yeah,
it's kind of the word there, but like also kind of not, but.
Taking that jump, not like the comfort of like, oh, I've been here before.
Yeah, it's like, oh, I feel this feels like the right decision to make.
Right. And it felt like, and I still kind of feel that way. If I ever have a small doubt, I remember it's like, now this lined up too nicely.
Mm-hmm.
These things are going well because I want them to go well.
Yeah.
So that's a big part. The MCA was a huge part of that influence. I had a few other friends that were a big influence of that. But going to that club, meeting all these people, having these experiences, and how much kind of like faith in Redneck Frankenstein, that got started technically before I changed majors.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So that made a big change in how I felt about it as well. MCA has been very formative at my time here at UCM.
Yeah. So yeah, so it was like the... How has the general transition from like classes been from, I guess, are you a freshman? Were you a freshman back in fall or? So
that's where it gets a little interesting. I'm technically a transfer student.
Oh, okay.
So the change in major was a little rough.
Mm-hmm.
I came from a place where there was a long history to that. I had a different major intention.
Mm-hmm. We don't need to necessarily get into all of that, but like.
Yeah, we don't need all that information. But it does change a few things. I was expected to graduate next spring, the spring of 25. And then I now have an extra semester that I'll be here, hopefully only
right, one. Yeah.
But that's how it changes things.
Mm-hmm.
That change of major, being a transfer student, there's a lot of factors that go into it.
Right, yeah.
I had anthropology classes under my belt, so going in, transferring in, it made it a little easier. I knew where I was going, how much time it would take, and how it'll sail.
Mm-hmm.
But changing into DMP, I didn't have any previous classes from before there, so going in that direction, it changed a lot of trajectory.
Yeah.
But it helps a lot to have counselors, advisors, other peers that are even able to kind of tell you about things, and professors that are also very supportive.
Mm-hmm. That's definitely something I've noticed, at least in DMP, is that the professors like are very clearly interested in whatever you're making or whatever you're doing in their classes. They're very clearly interested.
I've had, it's very nice to have a professor stop me in the hallway and ask me, it's like, how's Redneck Frankenstein going?
Yeah.
At first it was kind of like, I don't know how to answer that question, but it's also because it's like, I've never had that experience in that kind of way from a creative standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
It's very nice to have that kind of interest from so many different levels of,
right. Yeah.
From they heard about it, they met me as a student, and now they're asking me questions about it.
Yeah.
And it's gotten to a point where I even have someone making a poster for, I believe, one of their classes because a professor suggested it. And I think a few other people in the class also suggested making a poster for it.
Mm.
It's completely engaging on so many different levels to have professors and peers and all these kind of people asking you about what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
It's very nice.
Yeah, I think it's just that, I mean, like just having that personal engagement on like the professor level also just helps in classes. I feel like it helps establish that personal connection to where if something like bad comes up in either person's lives there, it's like, okay, I understand. Here's how we'll adapt.
Exactly.
And that's a huge help in especially like college where it's like stuff is kind of volatile sometimes.
Right.
So having that anchor almost is very, very helpful.
It's very nice to have professors that'll help work with you, especially understanding each other on like a personal level. Still, you know, obviously professional.
Yeah.
But they're still understanding.
Mm-hmm.
To have a professor to be like, all right, we'll figure out what we can do. Mm-hmm. That is so nice to hear when it comes to classes. If something, I've had some other things happen, you know, like outside in my personal life.
Yeah.
I've had to reach out to teachers and be like, hey, I've got some stuff going on. Mm-hmm. I apologize. I'll try to get this sorted out. And they'll be like, That's okay.
We'll figure it out.
Mm-hmm. And it's so nice to have that on that kind of level. It's very interesting.
Mm-hmm. So I think we'll go and end off with this last question. You were kind of talking about it a little bit. What are some other projects that you might want to work on in the future?
Ooh, in the future. I've wanted to learn more about making documentaries personally.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen a lot of them being made. I want to learn more.
Yeah.
But I've also had a lot of different script ideas for different things that from off campus, I have friends that are interested in movies that they're at different points in their lives and they're not students here.
Yeah.
So we've worked on scripts like that. And then that kind of became a thing where it's like, all right, I'll let you figure out how to direct this. You have equipment on the campus that you can use and you have actors that'll work with you. Try and figure it out.
Yeah.
So it's very nice to be able to have people to talk to in that kind of way here, especially because with the amount of projects that you want to try to look at and take on, excuse me, I apologize.
No problem.
To have people be interested in other projects that you may have, different thoughts. But looking at those projects to try on, I want to try different serious things.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, I come from a place where it's a little easier to write things that are kind of funny.
Yeah.
It's easier to go with that kind of concept because you don't have to worry too much about the seriousness of a situation.
Right. You don't have to worry about keeping it serious, making sure it's like it's believable is the way to put it. Because in a comedy, it can be a bit goofy, a bit off the wall. But in like a serious drama, you need to keep up the realism in a way.
Right. There needs to be a certain point where you're still having that writing be at a certain level. Like if you're making a comedy, if someone ad-libs something, and someone, you know, kind of breaks character a little bit, you can kind of work with that.
You can work with that because it's like, oh, yeah, it's a comedy.
But if you're doing a tragedy and there's like a tear-jerking scene and then someone accidentally, you know, like miss-says something or a voice cracks, you have to reshoot the scene.
Right, depending on what it is,
Yeah, you might have to restart that little a few sentences back, a paragraph back.
Yeah.
It changes a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to try and tackle that from a perspective of writing and directing.
Yeah.
I'd like to understand that process a bit better.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, I come from a place where horror and understanding these kind of monster stories is something that I find easier for myself.
Uh-huh.
So I know that I can write about them. But when it comes to things of a more serious nature, grounded in reality, I would like to take on one of those kind of challenges in a project.
Yeah. I also have a bit more interest personally in like the more fantastical side of like film in general, but then I also realized that I definitely need to be working on some more grounded, serious stuff because I mean, having that balance is really important in general, honestly, in like both consuming and then creating media. It's just having that balance of, oh, I can make the fun comedy, but I can also make a serious drama. I feel like it's a good balance just to have.
Exactly. I like to look at a lot of different directors' perspectives on these things. Ridley Scott, you know, made Alien and Blade Runner, but he still also has movies that are about like Napoleon and like real world stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Even John Carpenter worked on a movie about Elvis.
Yeah.
He went from Halloween and, you know, all those kind of horror movies, The Fog, and to also have a movie in his wheelhouse that was, realistic.
Yeah.
Literally. Mm-hmm. About a real person.
Yeah.
I think it's very important to have that kind of understanding and versatility, especially looking into a field that's this big.
Oh, yeah, especially. Because, I mean, if you have versatility in this field, you will succeed more than someone who doesn't.
Exactly. I was going to say, even that can take you a lot of places in of itself.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
Because, I mean, like, when you think of just, even, like, specifically, like, camera work specifically, that could be camera work for thousands of different things, like weddings, training videos, actual film, TV. It's like the list goes on and on. And then that's a whole list for every single element of making a film, basically.
Exactly.
Or even just producing video projects in general.
Even like so many people that work on movies started at working in a news station.
Yeah.
There's so much discipline and practice that goes into the different challenges that it's amazing to have so much practice and discipline and challenges in the projects that people can take on and work and lead them.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that I can learn more about that kind of process, take on those kind of challenges in future projects.
Mm-hmm. All right. I think that's a good place to come on. Thanks for coming on, Wyatt.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. This has been Voices of UCM, sponsored by Rise Community Services. Be sure to tune in next week at 7 p.m. on both Wednesday and Saturday. You can listen to the show at ucmbeat.com on either the live feed or at any time by going to the Shows tab and finding the Voices of UCM tab. Once again, I'm your host, Andrew Zellner, and we'll talk next time on Voices of UCM.